There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
We've got a vet judge with us from Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. Joins us every single week for Radio Book Club. Hello, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Nice to see you.
Nice to be back. Nice to see you back, Steph.
I think what we have to do is find out, because I have missed this. I was on the sofa watching my live trials thinking...
What, you weren't listening to us?
I couldn't, because I was the 13th member of the jury and I had to concentrate. It was difficult being on that jury, let me tell you. But office gossip at the Emirates Lit Fest. What have you got for us?
Hang on. They've got plenty of that, haven't they? Let me fire that. Here we go. Look at all gossiping in the office, eh? Do they ever get any work done?
Never. No, that's just what it's like all the time. So much noise. But all the noise at the moment is about a couple of things happening today. One is, after the show, 4 o'clock, I have to hot foot it out and not take the wrong turn in getting onto the Umpskeam Road to go to King's School Albarsha, when we've got about 200 teachers who are going to find out all about how their schools can participate in the Lit Fest. And then my day's not finished. I've got a race home, put my posh frock on, get my lippy on, and we are off to the Time Out Kids Awards tonight to see if we've won anything.
Oh, that's why you're not looking any discombobulated.
Correct.
Then. Yeah,
I
you're
need
all
to be calm
makeup and everything
today.
On.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You
yeah.
already look flashy enough, to be honest.
Yeah, you don't have to go and change.
Oh, I might just go straight there from King's then.
So how can kids get involved? What are these teachers going to be hearing?
So they're going to be hearing, we're not going to tell them which authors are coming, but we're going to tell them how they can join in getting tickets for the kids to come and see things, great poetry things happening, all the stuff that schools can participate in, and how they can help us promote the festival and get those children reading, which is really what it's all about.
And you do see more and more kids at the festival every single year, don't you?
Yeah, tripping
over them all over the place.
Yeah, they get the day off school, don't they, or half a day off, pile in the bus.
That's right.
All with the uniforms
and
on and show up.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's good. It's good.
Fantastic stuff. Good luck tonight in the
Thank
awards.
Thank you very much.
What award are you up for?
We're up for the Best Family Day Out.
Oh,
and we
got
are,
to
obviously.
It.
I know. I mean, right. I don't, just give it to us.
Fingers crossed, everyone.
I know.
Wish them
yes,
luck.
Please. Yeah.
Because they perform as well, don't they? They're usually in the opening ceremony, there's
we have kids all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, doing stuff.
All around, tripping over them. Yeah.
Good gossip. But how are the roadworks coming along?
Oh, well, don't. I can't. I
still
can't
having to change your shoes to get into work?
I can't even talk about it. I'm sorry.
Really?
It's not good, really. We had even more bits dug up the other day. And then yesterday they'd actually got, you know, that sort of cutter thing that cuts stone that goes only much, much louder. Oh, if
Great.
I could have got my hand on the man who was wielding that.
Poor guy, having to be close to it. Can you imagine? Well, do keep us posted on that, because everyone hangs on an edge to know what's happening with the roadworks outside the Emirates Lit Fest every single week. Right, I think it's time.
Are you ready? Let's do it.
Misanthropic, ignominy, admonish, rapacious, incomprehensibilities. Word for the week.
You know, you're up against a reigning champion this week.
Yeah, I'm very surprised.
And the thing is, I won on an outside broadcast situation, which is more difficult because there's a lot more going on, a lot of distractions, you know, people coming up, a lot going on. I played a blinder last week, didn't I?
It was good. I have to say it was good. Yeah.
You are only as good as your last win, though, aren't you? Let's see if it can continue. Yeah.
You know, Yvette told us last week that they actually ask at the office if we really get upset if we don't win.
they worry for my safety.
As they should.
You know, the pressure that she's under having to judge these things is pretty heavy.
If you haven't heard this before, Yvette gives us a word every single Monday, and then it's our job to try and fit that word seamlessly into conversation and use it in the right context and pronounce it correctly as well.
So what was the word this week?
It was Epicurean.
Yeah.
Which means you love particularly food, good lifestyle.
Now, does it have to be food?
Doesn't have to be food.
But it mainly
is,
has to be. Yeah.
But let's see. Let's see how it was used, shall we?
Okay, let's do battle then, Steph. It's in no particular order. Our producer, Mark, has put these in, so nothing to do with me.
Well, there is an order, though.
But I happen to go first.
Ah, okay, yeah. Good.
I'll tell you what, it's a good job that guy wasn't Epicurean, because I don't think there'd be many fine dining restaurants out there in the middle of the ice.
On a patch of ice,
yeah,
definitely
not. Yeah,
Can I just say, though, you did wedge it in a completely inconvenient moment, didn't he, Shruti?
Yeah.
It was good to be fine, I felt. Yeah,
well, you know, I mean, I was under pressure. I was getting a lot of looks from Marcus there, so I was under pressure.
This is brilliant. So you heard it live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You heard the context it was used in.
Yep.
Rammed into a story that had nothing to do with food.
But doesn't that deserve a little bit of extra, you know, extra marks?
Yeah, it depends how you look at it.
Thinking
it really
on my feet. Mm. Thinking on my feet, getting dirty looks from the control room.
By the seat of your pants.
But it was about food. You did relate it to restaurants.
Yeah.
Yeah, eating. Yeah.
So what do you think? How was it?
It was okay. It was okay, yeah.
All right, let's see what Steph managed to come up with then, shall we?
Welcome back to The Ticket. If you are an Epicurean and you like the good things in life, then you've got to go and check out the podcast if you just missed what we did there. We had a jazz genius in the studio with us, only 31 years old, but already one of the greats, I would say, Justin Coughlin. Can I just say,
struggling
the
there,
gig
struggling.
Is at Q's that serves food.
Nothing to do with it.
What?
Absolutely zero to do with it. Okay, Q's does serve lovely food, I will give you that.
You're not the judge. Just looking at Epicurean here, it says, a disciple or student of the Greek philosopher Epicurus. Doesn't mention food there. Then number two, a person devoted to sensual enjoyment, especially that derived from fine food and drink.
It's a family show.
But not necessarily.
Yes.
Not exclusively. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh.
All right, then. So after that little silence there, what did you make of those two, offerings?
Well, I don't know. I mean, am I allowed to take into account the fact that one of them was possibly planned better than the other? Is that allowed?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, in that case. It's going to have to be Steph. I'm sorry.
Yes!
What? Are you sure about that?
Can you just...
Radio
Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
Just give me a little second. I know I shouldn't have played that.
He's upset.
This is what I should have played. Here we go. Right.
And the winner is... Steph Bergen.
Thank you. I love that. We're going to need a new word, though.
Oh, yeah. I've got a good one. Well, I think it's good. But I had to check lots of times in lots of different places to see if my new word was actually a real word. The word for next week is betrump.
What?
I know.
Okay, what do you think it means, Mark?
Is it anything to do with Donald?
No.
No.
Well, I say no.
To be Trump somebody.
Is it something that could happen after a tin of beans?
No.
Okay.
I would have thought like put someone down or like beat them.
Not exactly, no. Mm. When we say it's not necessarily related to Donald, I'm not sure. It definitely existed way before Donald. But the word be Trump means to deceive or cheat. Mm.
Deceive or cheat? And in what context would you use it? Can you give us a sentence?
Yeah, so Mark could feel that he was betrumped out of winning Word of the Week.
So it's betrumped.
Or to betrump, yeah, so you can be betrumped.
Hang on, you're going to have to be more clear.
I'm not so sure this was the greatest word to choose this week.
Okay, so betrump is to cheat or deceive, yeah. So
the person who was cheated or deceived was betrumped.
Correct.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So are we using be Trump or be Trumped?
Either. I think I'll accept either.
Okay.
It's right. A verb, so it's fine.
Righto.
That's that then. I think I'll go and have a lie down.
The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
Yvette Judge.
Yeah, Yvette Judge is with us, even though I'm not very happy with her this week. Welcome back to the show.
The atmosphere is positively frosty in the studio today.
Very, very chilly.
Very chilly.
I just won Word of the Week. It's good to be back and winning again, I gotta say. Looking at the book news this week, I found this fascinating today. I really want to know what you think about this, Yvette, but anyone listening, also let us know your thoughts on this. Audible 01. So streaming giant Netflix. You know Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have announced that their next step forward will owe much to the past as they look to make the experience of watching their TV shows more like reading a book.
I read this. I think it's brilliant.
It is brilliant, isn't it?
It is.
I think it's brilliant.
Why do you think it's brilliant?
Well, what do they mean, so what? So what they're saying is you've got your episodes. Now, normally, we are so used to it being 45 minutes, 60 minutes, 90 minutes.
Yeah.
It's and every episode of a series is the same length. When you read a book, the chapters are different because it depends on how much you want to put into that particular part of the book. So they're going to have some episodes that are maybe only 20 minutes and then the next one, because it's a longer chapter, could be an hour. And why has nobody thought of that before? I guess it's all to do with scheduling, with what you have to put in between the shows and everything. But I think that's great. I really like that idea. I think it's
Do you not think you'd be disappointed, though, if you're used to it being a 45-minute show and it knocks off after 20 minutes? So you're going to be a bit, you know.
Well, the thing with Netflix...
You just keep watching.
It's all about binge-watching. So you might have an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Which is how that might need to unroll. Mm-hmm. Like you might not want to stop at 60 minutes and have a cliffhanger there. You might need the cliffhanger to be at 109 minutes, say, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the next one might just be a really short.
Yeah, I think they quoted the example is William Faulkner, who had a chapter that was one sentence. So hopefully they won't go quite to those lengths.
No.
But I think it's a really good idea. And it also gives you more opportunities to take a natural pause and rush and get some more food.
Another cup of tea.
Absolutely.
It's quite possibly, I think, the biggest shake-up to happen in the world of television since we started seeing actors doing TV, big actors. Like, that was a big change. Yeah. But this, you're right, why has no one thought of this before?
I mean, it is simple, really, isn't it?
Really, really simple. Yeah. So, yeah, let us know what you think of that and whether you would be happy with that. Because the other thing is, it's going to get rid of the credits.
Mm. Yeah,
you would can't. Would we miss them?
No.
You don't think so? You wouldn't miss that 3-minute-long credit on Game of Thrones?
My husband does watch all the credits.
Do you know what I did the other night?
He is last man in the cinema.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
A lot of people do that. They don't want to miss anything.
Yeah, they're sweeping up round.
Does it infuriate you?
Yeah. Do you know what I managed to do the other night? I was so proud of myself for this. I managed to put on Game of Thrones, have a shower, and get back before it started. During the credits.
That was good. I thought you'd been not too well and moving gingerly.
This was before the hop. Right? But yeah, let us know your thoughts. 4001, do we want to watch television like we read books? Would you be happy with a 19-minute episode of Game of Thrones, say? Or, I mean, I'd definitely be happy if it was a 2.5-hour episode.
Yeah.
That would be wonderful, wouldn't it? But yeah, credits would disappear. You wouldn't have those.
Every 3 minutes.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
All right, so thoughts coming in on that, please. It's your book news for this week. Let's get on to the books proper, a book for every kind of travelling we've got for you this afternoon. And we're going to start with a travel book for the kids when they're travelling off to sleep at night.
We are. So what have you brought in for us?
I've got one of my favourites. I've got David Walliams' book, and I've got World's Worst Children, Volume 2.
We love him, don't we?
Oh, I love David Walliams. He really is the new Roald Dahl. If you like... Your kids like Roald Dahl, you like Roald Dahl, or you remember it from when you were a child, have a look at David Walliams, because there are a lot of celebrities who write books. They're not always brilliant. He is. And this one is fantastically illustrated by the wonderful Tony Ross. So it's just a perfect combination of beautiful colour pictures and great, funny writing from David Walliams.
Who was, of course, at the Lit Fest a few years ago.
He was indeed, as was Tony Ross.
And he went round the schools as well, didn't he?
No, he did. He just did one big performance, yeah.
I was there. I watched it. It was amazing. He's so funny.
He is funny.
The way he talks to the kids.
Yeah.
But it's really entertaining for the grown-ups.
Perfectly pitched so that everybody can actually enjoy what he's saying.
Now, we normally try and bring this book to life with a little excerpt. You're going to be the narrator, as usual, Yvette.
Okie doke. So we're going to have a little section from Spoiled Brad. So basically this book is full of horrible, horrible, truly, truly dreadful children. And the story we've got, Spoiled Brad.
So Mark is going to play the dad and I'm going to play the brat.
The Brad.
Brad the brat.
Brad the brat. Okay, I can do this. Who starts? Who is it? Right, it's me. Okay, here we go. It's not fair that I have to wait another whole year for my birthday.
Well, everyone has to wait, Bradley Jr. That's my birthdays are special.
I don't want to wait,
declared the boy.
I want it to be my birthday every day.
Mom and Pop shared a look. They were used to their son acting like a spoiled brat, but this was a new low.
Son, yesterday we laid an incredibly expensive day for you.
Began Pop.
You had a giant chocolate cake.
I love cake,
announced Brad.
We know,
said Pop.
There was a fanfare in the garden and a mountain of presents.
Continue, Pop.
And we bust in hundreds of children from all over the state to pretend to be your friends.
Then you can do the same again today and the next day and the day after that. Where are my pancakes? And the day after that and the day after that.
And if we don't?
Asked Pop. Brad Jr. thought for a moment.
If you don't, I will put both of you in an old folks' home at the earliest opportunity and I'll leave you there to rot.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
I don't think that was our best one.
No, it was all right. Let's hear from David Walliams talking about how these books came to fruition.
It's called The World's Worst Children. It's a collection of short stories about children with really bad traits. They're like morality tales, really. And it's halfway between a novel and a picture book. It's full of illustrations. And it came about because I spend a lot of time going into schools, talking to kids about books and reading. And I often ask the kids, who likes reading? And most of them put their hands up. And I say, who doesn't like reading? And there's normally a few boys at the back, books
reluctant.
Are boring. I go, where's that? I want to see more killings in books. You know, those kind of answers. And and I thought, I want to write a book especially for them. I want to write a book for the reluctant reader. So I really set about trying to write a book that was as funny and as visual and as surreal as possible. And it's not too demanding on the young reader because it's short stories rather than a big narrative. I think, you know, hopefully all kids will like it. But I really want to aim at those kids because it's really important to get kids reading. Because if they don't read as kids, they generally don't read as adults.
That's something that you often say, Yvette. It's really important to get them reading early.
It most certainly is. Yeah, and David Walliams is a great introduction.
Just remind us of the name of that book.
World's Worst Children, Volume 2, David Walliams.
Lovely. We're coming back and we're heading off to, is it the bath?
Oh, I think so.
We got a book for the bath when we come back. We've also got a book for the plane, if you are lucky enough to be travelling shortly, and one for the back of a taxi.
And a train, maybe, as well.
The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
Yes, indeed. Yvette Judge from the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature is pointing us in the right direction of a few books.
Indeed.
Yeah. We are travelling today, travelling to all different kinds of places, whether it be by plane, train, automobile, or just into a lovely hot bath, which is where we're going next with a book for the bathtub, aren't we?
Let's dive in.
And I think this one might make you a little bit wrinkly in the bath, because I think this is one that you can want to keep reading. I spend a lot of time trawling Amazon to find the right books and things like that. So this one I came up with, and it is called Villa in Italy, and it's by Elizabeth Edmondson. It's not a particularly new book, but I was just intrigued by it, and it's just right up my street, because it's mysterious, not crime necessarily, but just got lots of hints of things that are strange and going on. So the idea is that four strangers are summoned to this neglected villa in Italy on the coast. They've each been left something in a will and they have to go to the villa. They don't know the person who owned it, so it's all really weird. And then it's all about the interconnections between them.
The people who were all there?
Yeah. And they're all quite different. You've got an opera singer who's lost her voice because she's been ill. You've got a writer who's got writer's block. And there's a scientist there. And then there's somebody who's just got a chaotic life. So it's a really good, creepy little story, and I quite like it.
That's funny, though, because the title would not grab me. When I saw the title for this book, I thought, that sounds boring, Villa in Italy.
Yeah. Oh, I love Italy, though, did it not? Now, you see, my daughter's just come back from Florence. I think had Italy in my mind. So when I spotted this one, I thought, yeah, that's it.
I like the sound of the story, though.
Yeah.
I really like the sound of the story.
Yeah. Let's have a take a listen into, it's in an audiobook format as well. Let's have a listen to it, see if it sounds like your kind of read. We join the book as we're introduced to the lady who eventually owns the villa.
Was she a friend of yours? I'm sorry. Don't be. I shall miss her. But she was born in 1870, so she had a long life, and a very full one. 1870? Goodness. So she lived to be 87. Susie tried to add 70 years of life to her own 17. She couldn't imagine it. Was she an Italian? No, she was English, but she married an Italian. Her own family had Italian connections. They owned a house in Italy called the Villa Dante, which she inherited. It is the most beautiful house, magical, a place of enchantment. How did you know her? We met during the war. She was a compelling personality, and she'd led a fascinating life. Rather a bohemian in her way. You would have liked her. She moved in artistic circles and knew most of the great painters and writers of her time. Many of them were her friends, and came to stay with her at the Villa Dante.
Villa Dante. Sounds nice.
Let me just ask you, though, when you read this book, Yvette, did you read it in that posh kind of accent in your head?
I was just feeling I sort of missed it, didn't I? I didn't get it right. I didn't get the right tone as I was reading it. But if I go back to it, I will now. I'm going to lose the Brummie accent and I'll be terribly, terribly when I read it.
Everything's Geordie
in my head.
That wouldn't have sounded right, would it, on the
audio
book?
Even Shakespeare.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's something for the Bath Villa in Italy.
And who's it by?
Elizabeth Edmondson. So look out for that one.
Next one, a book for the plane. Who's travelling next? Anyone travelling anytime soon on an aeroplane?
Possibly.
No. Possibly? No.
Possibly.
Where to?
Not for another month.
Maybe to London. Don't know yet. Maybe. Mm-hmm.
Shoot.
Oh, mine is not. Oh.
Go on.
I'm not until November.
November? Mm. I might be travelling in October.
I'm October.
Oh. Right. Okay, this is for us then.
Yeah.
What have you got?
I have got The One That Got Away, Annabelle Cantaria.
This rom-com?
No, absolutely not. Definitely not. No. So Annabelle is based in Dubai. Mm. She was one of the winners, very first winner of the Montegrappa Story Award that we do at the festival. And as a result of that, she had her book published. The reason I really love her books is because she always gives me a mention. Is that wrong?
It's a bit biased.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't care. She knows how to get me to talk about the book. But she writes, they're thrillers. They're really... And they're getting creepier. She's getting darker.
Oh, I love it.
I mean, I have counted her as a friend, but now I worry.
That you may become more than a mention one day.
Yeah. I'm never going to upset her. So The One That Got Away is a school reunion. So this resonated because I had my school reunion in the summer.
Do you?
Yeah, oh my goodness, last June. Oh, scary stuff. But this is based on a school reunion. Do you go, don't you go? The central character decides she will go, and then
you'd have to go.
Yeah, you've got to go. You've got to look at people, and then of course she reconnects with someone from her past, and it's all about how, I guess, these sins of the past cast long shadows, and you're never sure in this book. There are twists and turns. Who's the hero? Who's the villain? And I was, caught out.
It's not easy that you get caught out, is it?
No.
You've read enough thrillers.
Which is actually the mark of a good book, isn't it? Because I'm just I don't believe that happened. So, Annabelle Cantaria, The One That Got Away. This is brand new, literally just out. Hot off the press. A goodie.
Don't be putting the pages too close together and you'll blur the ink on those. Have you ever been to a school reunion, Mark?
No, it's something that I'd love to do, though.
Me
I
too.
Really would. Yeah, I've never been invited to one. I don't know why. Maybe it's because everybody's lost touch with me or something. You know, I need to start rekindling a few.
Yeah, get back on Facebook and find them all.
Yeah.
Friends reunited.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you do? Do you just like stand in a room and say, oh, do you remember what?
We had a picnic at school. It was an all-girls school, so it's a little bit different. Annabelle's story, it's always not an all-girls school, but we were. So there was all that, what are they going to be wearing? What are they going to look like? And it's quite a relief, actually, to find that, funnily enough, we're all the same age. There's coincidence. Yeah. And we all look just like we did 40 years ago. None of us have changed one bit.
Was there anyone there who had done particularly well in life?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? You always want to be that person at a school reunion.
Yeah, the ones who've got the enormous houses with the beautiful garden.
Who are good at science.
Yeah, that's always a bit sad. But then there's the rest of you who can go, well, never very nice. Yeah. Was she?
It didn't travel like me.
No.
Doesn't live in Dubai.
No, exactly.
Still living just around the corner from school.
Yeah, never went anywhere.
Yeah,
true. Yeah.
And we're going to give you another listen to a snippet of the audiobook for this one, The One That Got Away.
Mummy bloggers, shop managers and men who work in IT. They'll all be here to bask in a little of their glorious classmates' success. They'll come just to be able to tell the people they hang out with that they're going out tonight with, you know, George Wolseley of Wolseley Associates. Self-effacing smile. Yes, him. We were at school together. My classmates and I are, I realise, some of the favoured few who knew George Wolseley before he became successful, before the celebrity lifestyle and the gorgeous Richmond house, the magazine spreads and the paparazzi shots. We're a select group that knows his secrets. Some of us more than others. I wonder if he's there already, George. On the pavement, the sound of unsteady heels makes me turn and I see two women, clutching each other's arm and sheltering under one umbrella, approach the door. I know them. They were close at school. Like me, they hung on to the outer peripherals of cool, but they didn't seem to care. They stuck together.
The One That Got Away, then. A book for the plane.
Yeah, Annabelle Cantaria, hot off the press, brand new. If you like the sound of that school reunion, I love the sound of that. It goes a little bit dark. Then you definitely have to check that plain book out. But you can read it anywhere else. We must say that. You don't have to read it on a plane.
You're allowed to read it wherever you like.
You are. Now, when we come back, we've got a book for the back of the taxi. We also have a book, if as far as you're travelling tonight, happens to be into the kitchen to do a little bit of cooking. And we've got a great travel book coming up too.
Well, I think the key factor is that the reader must engage emotionally with the book. You know, a book can be clever, it can be well written, it can be full of good ideas, but that's not enough. At least it's not enough for a popular bestseller. What people like is the emotional reaction. A tear comes to their eye, their heart beats faster, they feel indignant about something in the story, or they feel scared about what's going to happen. That's the miracle of literature, because of course they know that it's just a story that Follett made up, but nevertheless they have those physical and emotional reactions to it, and that's what makes you turn the page. That's what you become involved in the fate of these characters, and you want to see what happens next.
That's Ken Follett, and he's the author of Hornet Flight. We're going to be hearing about that in our audiobook a little bit later on in the show.
The Radio Book Club. Official ticketers past this point only.
With Yvette Judge from the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. We've already had something for the bath. We've had a children's book, and we're heading off to the taxi next with something from Ken Follett, who we just heard there, talking about what makes a good book.
Yeah, this is one of his older books, actually. This is Hornet Flight. I actually prefer Ken Follett's earlier stuff because they're more thrillers. His later books have got really, really thick and they're just too heavy to carry. So this one for me is a great one. It's set in the Second World War, Danish resistance, set in Denmark. Yeah, and it's a really good spy thriller, if you like. So
historically accurate, or
who knows? I think it probably is, actually, because I think he's got a whole team of people who do his research for him, so I can't imagine that it's not historically accurate.
Hang on a minute. So he gets other people to do the research?
Yeah, he's got something he calls Team Follett, which is mainly his family.
How do we feel about that?
We met him at London Book Fair, and it's just like this well-oiled machine, so they do his publicity, his promotion, all sorts of things, and he writes the books. Well, I think he's got it down to a fine art, actually. He's obviously done quite well with writing his books. So
he's good at
I
delegating.
I can't knock it, yeah.
Absolutely. I don't know, well, can we not knock it? I like to think, when I read a book, that the author has done all of the research that's gone into that book.
Mm.
I don't like to think.
I think you automatically think that way.
Yeah,
don't you?
I'm sure he's done some of it. I just suspect that he probably has a little bit
bubble
of help.
Burst for me,
I shouldn't have said anything. I'm sure he does.
And he didn't say
that. Himself.
He didn't say that. In what makes a great book, get someone else to do your research.
Yeah,
did he?
No.
Which is interesting. Does he want people to know that?
Maybe not. Maybe he does all his own research. I'm just going to backpedal really, really
quickly.
Take it all back. Yeah. Yeah,
but this is a goodie, is it?
Yeah, I really like his early stuff, his adventure stories. They're a great read. This and the Key to Rebecca is another one. So Ken Follett, early works for me, I prefer.
Hornet Flight, that is our back of the taxi suggestion for you this week. We're moving on next to my favourite book of the week, which is a kitchen book.
Yeah, and I did have you in mind because it's a vegetarian book.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's a River Cottage cookbook. It's Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall. He's done another vegetarian cookbook as well. I think this is his second one. But he's just great at bringing vegetables to life on the page and actually making you want to eat them. So, you know, he talks about how with vegetables, when you're cooking vegetarian dishes, particularly if you're doing roasted vegetables or something like that, you don't necessarily need exact quantities. It's just whatever you've got, and you can use. Pictures are brilliant, all those wonderful colours that he brings together on the page. So if you're vegetarian, you've got vegetarian friends, or you know, you're doing the half vegetarian, half meat that a lot of people do now.
Well, people have gone a step further than that now, you know, and there's a new range of eaters called the flexitarian.
That's it, yeah, flexitarian.
So they'll generally eat vegetables all week, and if they go out, they'll maybe have a meal that's got a little bit of meat in it. But the meat is no longer the staple for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Which I think can only be a good thing, right?
I think so. I think it's a healthier way of eating, isn't it? You get all the nutrients you need, really. All those colours that are meant to be so good for us in what we eat. So this
what kind of things are in this book then? What's he cooking?
I'm just going to have a look. He's got lots and lots of roasted vegetable recipes. So I'm just going to find
the roasties,
right book.
No, you can't really. No. Let's have a listen to Hugh anyway. He's giving us some great advice on doing different things with vegetables.
I'd like to think that all the cookbooks I've written have got a bit of a mission statement at their core. And in this case, the mission statement couldn't be more simple. It is just, let's all eat more vegetables. And I guess to some people it might seem a curious, counterintuitive message coming from someone who is quite a well-known carnivore and in fact has published rather a fat tome on the joys of cooking meat. But actually, if you look at the River Cottage meat book, one of the opening lines really is that I think we all eat too much meat. And in many ways, the River Cottage veg book is the companion volume, a great stack of recipes to enable us to eat a bit less meat and enjoy our veg even more. And if we are going to get more from our vegetables, well, I think we have to be just a bit more adventurous with them. Start doing things with them in the kitchen that perhaps we haven't tried before. Let's roast them, grill them, barbecue them, turn them into little fritters and exciting things like that. Let's maximise the extraordinary range of flavours and textures that are on offer. And that's what I hope I've done in the book. There's a couple of hundred recipes in here, catering for all occasions, from quick store cupboard suppers to really special dinner party dishes that you'd be proud to put before your most demanding culinary friends.
Yeah, I love it. I'm all for that, eating more vegetables. Because you get to the end of the day, especially when you're trying to do the vegetarian thing, and you're like, wow, I can't believe how much veg I've eaten.
Mm. No, it's great. And he gives you swaps. So if you haven't got that particular vegetable or it's out of season, you can't find it, he suggests other things that you can replace it with.
So that is called Veg Every Day, that book, isn't it? Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall.
Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall.
Wonderful. Yep. Where are we going for our travel book this week?
Well, this is a bit of a sneaky travel book, really, because we're travelling back in time. We're also travelling across London. I really like the idea of what's hidden under the ground
we
in cities.
We do too. We love that, don't we?
Yeah.
Tunnel
love
systems.
Digging stuff
Yeah.
So this, Gillian Tyndall is a prize-winning author, and she's written lots and lots of books, historical books, really, rather than travel books. But the one I have picked for today is looking at the impact that Crossrail, which is this big new system they're building in London, has had on London itself and what they're discovering. So it's called The Tunnel Through Time, Gillian Tyndall. And she takes you on this journey and you're discovering all those rivers that are hidden underground and lost in London, the old train tunnels. One of those, it sold a mystery for me because I knew that originally when the underground opened, there were still steam trains, there weren't electric trains, and how that actually worked. So I didn't realise that the Metropolitan line, which is half underground, half above ground, is because they needed the steam to escape from the steam trains. So that's why that one has that sort of strange mix of sometimes you're in the open air, sometimes you're not.
You should tell someone that at the Time Out Awards tonight, because that is a great dinner party little fact to throw in when someone brings up London. Don't you think?
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Maybe not for everybody.
Well, I'm going to keep a hold of it.
I think some eyes would glaze over. But yeah. I like things like
me
that.
Me too.
I don't care.
I think a lot of us are nerds deep down.
Oh, I'm just on the surface. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Proud nerd.
Absolutely.
So that's a great travel book then.
I think so. Yeah, Gillian
Tyndall.
Tunnel
Through Time.
Yeah.
Right, we've got just time to squeeze in a podcast.
Okay, so I was thinking of Steph with my veggie cookbook, and I was thinking of Mark with my podcast, because it's quite hard to find, you know, ones that are about music, which I know is your passion, but I found FT, Life of a Song, and it takes songs that we all know from all different eras and explains either how they came to be written, bit of history about them, how the recordings were made, and they're really short. They're like a quick, I don't know, doing the washing up or something like that.
Quick hit on the music. Let's have a listen in then to this one.
Can a pop song change the world? The song in question is David Bowie's Starman, released in 1972.
There's a star.
So this song was a big hit for Bowie in 1972 and made a very dramatic impression, didn't it, David?
It did.
I believe on yourself too.
It did, yes. It was David Bowie's breakthrough hit. But for me personally, and I think from what I've gathered for a lot of other people, I remember vividly watching him on the BBC's Top of the Pops and seeing this sort of androgynous, Baco foil-clad, otherworldly creature. And you could sort of sense newspapers being rustled with disapproval by parents up and down the country while their offspring looked on in sort of amazement that
were
there
you
was...
in the room with your parents?
I was, yes. No, yes.
Yeah, David Bowie, Starman. And they go through all these different songs, don't they? And
yes,
you know, give you the history behind them.
La Vie en Rose, which was written in 1930, whatever, right up to date. It's brilliant.
Guys, I'm absolutely devastated about this because I feel like this is one of my ideas, like this self-feeding cat ball. So I had this idea for a podcast like this, and it was going to be play a song, then I talk about where I think it came from, and then Nats from Dubai 92 would tell the truth because she knows music. Someone's done it now.
Somebody stole that.
They beat you to it, Steph. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
There it is.
Life of a Song. Go find that. Great podcast.
Yes, definitely.
Just play the whole song. I'm guessing not. Just snippets.
Snippets.
Yes. Yeah. Licensing rules and all that.
Yvette, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll see you in a week's time.
Good.
Bye. See you later.
The Radio Book Club.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.